Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. This is DJ Ginger MC, and I have something very important to tell you. That is the fact that you are about to get notified.
KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine.
The opinions and views expressed in this program do not reflect those of KUCI, its management, or the UC Board of Regents.
All right, good morning, everyone. This is Ryan Fullen, also known as DJ Ginger MC. If you are curious, yes, I am a ginger. And today we have a very ginger show because we're talking about something that is important to me, should be important to you, and it's something that is top of conversation these days. Unfortunately, it hasn't been topic of conversation for the entire bridge of time, but we're going to talk about it today. And that is the conversation about women on the move. That is right. More than half of this world and the amazing female counterpart to the male counterpart. And we have somebody here today who is going to tell us about how they're moving, how they can move more efficiently, what they can do online and offline to move as fast as they can to make a difference and spread their message. Ladies and gentlemen, we have Lori Schoff. Whether or not I pronounce that correct, we're going to find out. Schoff, Lori Schoff, she is a master coach, not just a coach, but she's a master coach, speaker coach who trains speakers as well as speaker coaches to speak speeches. So it's like master coach inception. How are you doing this morning, Lori?
I am doing great. You and I had talked about the fact that I might be an Uber, that I'm invading the office space that I'll be training in a little bit later on, and I'm finding myself in a place that I haven't been in a long time, the nursing room at this company.
Well, I think that it's very topical for our conversation, which is women on the move. This morning, you're already in Ubers and in rooms that you shouldn't be, but it's because of those reasons that you are here today, and I think it's sort of a nice analogy to our show, which is sometimes you got to go outside of the lines when you're drawing to make sure that people see what's happening. So why don't you tell us a little bit more about yourself and sort of how you became a master speaker coach and what that really means?
Sure. I think the most common question I get asked is, how did I get into this field? And from when I was a little girl, I had very few talents, Ryan. But my main talent, and I got this from my mother, who's scared of everything, was that I was not scared of getting up in front of people. So at the time, there really weren't that many women in business, and there weren't that many women speakers. So I went into speech pathology and became a speech pathologist. After that, I'd say, I'm going to say my late 20s, I became interested in being entrepreneurial and in business and trained myself and took advanced courses in speaking and communication, and I've had a long career, including writing things, being on Oprah, being on the Today Show, as an expert in communication. And I'm happy to talk a little bit about sort of the male-female angle of it when we get a chance.
Yeah, because you've got a book or a couple of books out, right? One of them is He Said, She Said, or He Talk, She Talk. What was that one?
It's called He and She Talk. And the other one is Smart Speaking. So Smart Speaking is for people who want some general tips about speaking. He and She Talk is for people who want to get along better with the opposite sex.
Okay. Well, these are all great and important topics. I'm interested in knowing some more specifics when it comes to the differences of male and female communication. But also just I want to spend some time today for the ladies and for the women out there and for the girls, all of the names to cover all of the spans as respectfully as possible to talk about how they can move the needle when it comes to advancement, career advancement, professional development, using the lens of speaking and sort of the courage of being in front of people and breaking into and, you know, finding their spots within the professional speaking world. So maybe we can do a little backdrop on really the state of the union when it comes to women in the speaking industry? Because unfortunately, there's still a gap. And why don't you talk to us about that and maybe why you think that is?
Okay, and I'm going to put it in a historical perspective. One of the reasons I've always been confident in this field is because I went to an all-female college. I think that does a lot for building confidence. So when I was in college, and, you know, through the 90s, there was a lot of very, very new research, kind of obvious things, but that men took up more space, and kind of funny things, like when you're on a plane, the males will tend to take the armrest. Watch out for that, ladies. that men talked more in meetings. Women were much less comfortable at negotiating and asking for salaries. So this was a hot topic. Now, an interesting thing happened, Ryan. I decided as a coach that this topic was dead, and started to just focus on what makes any speaker, male or female, effective. And now I've done sort of a 180, because just things haven't progressed as much as we'd like. So that we know that less than 10% of CEOs, who are the people who are out there speaking a lot, notice poor Mark Zuckerberg these days, and it's crazy. We're 50% of the population. We're not sought after as much as speakers. So I was talking to someone from Speaker Hub the other day, and she said that the top 10 or more speakers that are sought after are male. So we're going to get serious for a minute, because it's not just the behavioral differences. I'm going to share a term your listeners may or may not be familiar with. It's called institutional sexism. What does that mean? It means that on an individual basis, no one thinks they're really prejudiced. But there's something going on in the system, in the culture, to the point where a lot of organizations have tried things like, this is with orchestras, blind tryouts. They'll have, for example, trying out people who play the flute behind a curtain. So, hold on one second. I'm on the move there with a call. They'll try out people who are trying to play the flute in an orchestra behind a curtain. Why? The orchestra has decided they don't want to pick someone just because they're male. There's been lots of research on what's called blind resumes. So because people were more likely to pick a Michael than a Michelle, many companies have adopted the policy of taking the name off a resume. So that's institutional. We as individuals, and I'm talking about males and females, do not feel we're being prejudiced. But there's something in the air that is accounting for the fact that women being as smart, as interesting as males just haven't succeeded. Any thoughts or comments about that? And then I'll go on to the individual differences.
Sure. I mean, those studies really speak for themselves. And I think that there's really a systemic, I guess, cultural perspective that has been passed down generation after generation with a conversation that is happening, but whether or not it really translates into, you know, mothers and fathers, propelling these stereotypes. And I was walking, I think, in Laguna the other day by a store, and there was this children's store, and they had pink dump trucks and they had blue tea sets. And it was just mm-hmm. like, wow, how cool is that? Because, I mean, as we grow up, and I think a lot of it roots from how we've grown up and the sort of the perceptions and the stereotypes that we either have been exposed to or that we just sort of take for granted, right? This idea that, I mean, it's I think it's systemic. I think it's great, the conversation that's happening now. You know, it's unfortunate that that it took this long and that it takes some of these really, you know, extreme situations to bring and shine the light on it. But yeah, I think that especially from mm-hmm. a business standpoint, there are those prejudices. And, you know, it's a real challenge. How do we work past that? Especially when the men, the white men, are holding a lot of those control levers. How do you slap them across the face politely to get them to sort of step up and see that it is a fair playing game and that the person who has the best talent should win?
And I mean, all of us are seeing changes. All of us can't get over the amazing articulate talks that the kids at the March for Our Lives gave. We just can't get over it.
Yeah.
So we're thinking that this next generation, and I have a kid who's in her early 20s, they're different. They're totally different in how they view diversity and prejudice. My daughter will call me out on anything I say that sounds a little bit sexist. So there's hope for the future. Nothing great has happened yet. But I'm extremely optimistic because I've seen these kids think a lot differently. But you're bringing up a good point. There's been, of course, the Me Too movement for sexual harassment. But, you know, on a maybe a much lighter note, having a Me Too movement in terms of women having more visibility as speakers, being sought after as speakers and as leaders in the business and organizational world, that's something we need to speak up for.
Now, do you think that the mere, skill of public speaking is something that can really level up and help ladies and women make those bold moves? Do you really feel that the power is within the actual communication of being in front of people and being seen as someone who's up on stage? Is that a superpower?
I like the way you put that, a superpower. One of the best ways to become visible and to be known as a leader is to be out there. There's so many talented people, male and female, who just aren't comfortable with being out there, and that does hurt their careers. And we have a lot of research which indicates that some of the most important ingredients for being a leader are not only being out there and getting pretty good at speaking in your own way. I want to emphasize that to your listeners. You know, there's passionate speakers like Oprah, and there's very low-key speakers, you know, who do very, very well. So you can develop your own style. There are obviously differences between male and female communicators, which I can go into. The reality is because, as you said, males have dominated, some of the traits associated with them have been viewed more positively. And I can give the obvious ones. Males, because of the shape of their vocal cords, have a deeper volume, a deeper pitch. And we associate a deeper pitch with being more influential. The next one is really obvious. Men are larger. And there's a high association between height and body size and taking up space and influence. So those are some of the advantages, again, because of the lens we've used. On the other hand, we could go into all the things that females seem to be very talented at.
So real quick, before we get to the females and sort of their natural attributes that are different than males, I'm a big fan of Nick Morgan. He has a great story. He's one of, you know, somebody I look up to in the speaking world. Crazy story that he was in a toboggan accident when he was 17 years old. Cracked his skull open, was basically in a coma. When he came out of it, he seemed to be normal, but he lost the ability to recognize and read facial features. It was part of his brain that was damaged. He dedicated his life to really understanding the modality of body language and what we say when we're not saying anything. And in one of his books, he talks about the concept of tonality and voice, and specifically, he's saying that from an evolutionary standpoint, there is a tendency for humans in the brain waves to have a tendency to lead and follow someone with a deeper voice. And it's
fascinating. That makes sense evolutionarily.
Yeah. So if you have, you know, let's say two people and one is like, "Hey guys, come with me." And the other one's like, "Hey guys, come this way." You know, it's like there's a certain amount of authority that comes with it. And he was citing these studies where presidents that are running for election, those that have a few decibels deeper actually win those elections. And so it's amazing how something like vocal cords can affect the way that you are perceived and that you lead. Now, I doubt that we're going to suggest that we have ladies speak in a deeper voice. I think it's
We do.
Oh, we do?
We actually do suggest that.
Okay.
Yeah, we suggest that they speak at the bottom of their pitch range.
That's interesting. And how do you find that? I know that Nick was talking about how you take a keyboard and you like hum the lowest that you can and you go up a few octaves and you find like something. Is there a trick or a way that our listeners can explore their own tonality to find that deepness?
Okay, yeah, I'll give you, I want to tell you how to do that very, very funny and quickly. And then I want to tell you an interesting story about me. So obviously we don't have a keyboard, and in my work I can't use a keyboard. I'm at companies, like I'm at an architectural firm now. They have everything else, but they do not have a keyboard here. So here's how to do it. Campbell soup. Mm-hmm. Bring your voice forward. Mm-hmm. You can do it with me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's number one. Bringing your voice forward. Then we're going to say ah. The vowel. Vowels carry the voice. Consonants don't. Don't ever trust a doctor who asks you to say E. It's only ah that gets the voice,
okay.
Gets the mouth open. So listen to me first, and then we'll do it together. Mm-hmm. Ah. Now, very out there. We need to really open our mouth. Now, listen to my third piece of this. This is quite easy. Mm-hmm. Ah. This is Lori's best voice. So that's the general range I should be in when I'm with my architect clients a little later on.
Hmm. So
now I have a cold now, so
yeah.
I'm going to sound deeper.
But
in
that
fact,
might
women
work.
Women are often told
that might work.
Smokers, they sound better. Go
that
ahead.
Might work to your advantage, right? Like if so, there's an advantage for women if you're on the move and you're feeling sick and you have a deeper voice. Like that might work out to your advantage there, right?
Exactly. And I hate to say this, but my female clients who are smokers, and there's very few of them have the deeper voice. That I do not suggest.
The raspy voice, you don't think that that works?
Yeah, do lay off the cigs. You want to try it with me? But
yeah,
you already
yeah.
have a good voice. So, everybody. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Ah, really fat voice, like you're catching a cantaloupe. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Ah. This is my best voice. So this is how Lori should talk.
Mm-hmm.
Want to hear the quick funny story?
Yes, I
go
do.
Ahead. No, do it.
Okay. Mm-hmm. This is Ryan's best voice. I dropped a little bit
right.
there. That was good. But I'm like, I dropped a little bit right there. Yes. And also a big
right.
part of that, before your story, a big part of that, isn't it also taking your breath from your diaphragm? And I think that's something I really, it's a quick fix for people. Because if you talk all nasally, there's not much bass and baritone to what you're saying. It's just very like nasally. But if you focus and you take the voice from your gut, your larynx isn't constricted and you actually find something that has a lot more natural volume, less need for microphones.
Absolutely. So your breath, and you're talking about diaphragmatic breathing, we can help your listeners find their diaphragm, actually, which is good for the Heimlich maneuver as well. That's your support system for your voice. So you're absolutely right that learning how to use your breath as support by having it come from deep within, from your diaphragm, as opposed to what we call upper chest or thoracic breathing, or they call also clavicular breathing, where it's more centered around your shoulder area. So you're absolutely right. There's a fun way to find your diaphragm. Under your breastbone, just pretend you're blowing up a balloon, and you'll feel a muscle pop out. That's your diaphragm.
Under your breastbone. Okay, I feel a little wiggle there.
You should feel a pop.
Yeah.
It jumps out, yeah. So that's that's the learning for the day.
Okay.
I have found my diaphragm.
Now, guys, you can find your diaphragm too, okay? This is not something that's exclusive for the
goodness,
ladies.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Just the word diaphragm sort of, I don't know.
I was going to say. Oh, my God.
Can we call it a manaphragm?
I love it. That's much better.
Now, I don't want to play into the whole stereotypes. I don't want there to be a diaphragm and a manaphragm, but kind of like, this is where it's challenging, right? Because you want to respect the differences. You want to support both male and female, but there are differences. And I think that as a man, I'm more willing to find my manaphragm than I am my diaphragm. I just, right?
You know, it's funny. In all these years, I literally never made the association between the organ, the diaphragm, and the contraceptive, the diaphragm, literally.
Yeah.
So, this is my learning for today. This is my insight for today.
Right, because thoughts become words and words become things, and so it really depends on what you think about things when it comes to words. And men, I think, are raised to sort of have a bit of manliness to them, and that means rejecting certain things that might come across as feminine. It just, that's just how sort of we're brought up. So even helping to realize that the words, right? Like, I don't know. So maybe we need to create a whole new set of vocabulary for men and women, or certain sort of words to just, I don't know, it's getting past that activation energy. Right. If you get somebody to really like, even I'm not even going to go so far for all my fellows out there and say the idea of finding your breath kind of sounds cheesy. I'm not going to lie. Right. Find your breath. All right. Put your hand here. It just, I can see people rolling their eyes at it like, ah, what are you talking about? I'm a man. I don't need to find my voice.
Yeah.
But it's a kind of thing where it's the difference between being great or good. And a lot of guys are maybe good, and they won't take that step to being great because there's certain perceptions that are holding them back. They don't want to be looked at as weak. Or I think the same thing comes from meditation and yoga, two of the most amazing things ever. But maybe we need to rename them and call them like broga and, you know, manitation.
I love it. That's so fascinating. And, you know, on a totally different topic but related to thinking about how men think, guys, I really would like you to think about, in your organization, in your company, who are, I'm just going to make up the number, two or three women who you think have high potential, and maybe they're going to be the, you know, maybe pick the ones who would be good at being visible about doing a teach-in or developing some sort of motivational talk, and go for it. Really promote them. Really mentor them. The other day, I worked with a young woman. She has an enormous amount of ambition. Unfortunately, she's stuck in a meeting all the time with a guy who's absolutely amazing in his field, but doesn't let her speak. And because he's more influential, you know, she yields to him. And that's a very common issue. And it also happens to males as well.
Yeah, and I think now all these issues with fear of speaking and, you know, embarrassment and self-doubt and lack of, you know, certain skills, those are both men and women. I just think that maybe men have a tendency to sort of mask it and pretend like they don't have issues, and women are maybe more, you know, more realistic, which is, I think, a great thing for them. But if that holds them back, I don't know, at the end of the day, you still have maybe the man that's the boss that's not helping to lift up women. So I'm going to throw out a tweet. It's going to say, gentlemen, in your organization, and this is going to come from you, so it's going to quote, gentlemen, in your organization, I challenge you to identify two to three women who you think have high potential and empower them to explore it. Mentor them. Let them speak. Do we like it?
Love it. Love it. Boy, we could start a revolution here.
Yeah, one tweet at a time. Actually, speaking of powerful women, I just picked up the 5-second rule by Mel Robbins. Are you familiar with her and her work?
You know, it's very interesting because she's from the Boston area.
Yeah.
And at the very beginning of her career, when she wasn't well known, I was in a little tiny booth with her. She had a little radio show, not as big as yours, from Barnes & Noble in downtown Boston. I was one of her guests.
Nice.
Yeah. So I know Mel. She's super.
Yeah, and she has this 5-4-3-2-1 launch concept, which is basically that you have an internal snooze button, and if you hit snooze on any decision that you'd make within 5 seconds, your brain will shut it off and just move on with whatever it is. So this concept of, like, I think I should do something, and if you think about it too much, you won't do it. And it's a really cool concept of 5-4-3-2-1, I'm going to do it. If you don't create action immediately following some sort of, like, inspiration or thought, like, I need to get up out of bed, I'm going to snooze, and then all of a sudden hours pass, versus just like 5-4-3-2-1, do it. And I think sometimes with speaking and standing up in an organization and asking for a raise and asking for an opportunity to speak, if you don't just sort of, like, find the instinct and make a move on it, it's going to pass. And then the passing will become a habit, and then your voice won't be heard. And then the habit of the boss will just be like, well, nobody asked, so I'm just going to continue to go on. So, you know, a call to everyone out there, find a few women who have high potential, and that means all women who have high potential, and see if you can, you know, give them a spot or a spotlight or a little bit of encouragement, because I think we all just need a little nudge to jump off of that rock into the water.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And you're reminding me of something I did go over with my group here a week ago, and might be an interesting tweet if you like it. It's find something that's a baby step, I shouldn't use that with guys, outside your comfort zone. So let's say you're very comfortable one-on-one. Speak in front of a group. If you're comfortable speaking in front of your group of peers, find an organization in your community that you can speak in front of. So step outside your comfort zone one step at a time. And maybe each of us, you and me, maybe we could give an example of what that might be for each of us.
Okay, and I do like your consciousness of the fact that guys might not like baby steps. Okay?
Because, right, okay. So we.
No, I like that. I like that.
How about half step? Half step.
Half step is cool. It's better than baby step. And actually, it's like,
right.
I'm trying to think of like a sports analogy or something that maybe is more
thank
manly.
You. Yeah, you know, I should get out of this nursing room, right? Baby step. Jeez. Okay.
Well, hey, you're on the move. Wherever you are, there you are. Okay, so let's talk about this as a tangible example of something that you can do to improve your, I'm going to say, communication. And it's getting outside of your comfort zone. So I'll let you go first. What is something that you're comfortable with? And then what is the sort of uncomfortable stepchild to that? And how would you go about pushing yourself through that?
Mm-hmm. Okay. So I'm comfortable in, you know, obviously I've had a career in many situations. I prefer talking to smaller groups because I get to know them than larger groups. But one thing I've said to people lately, I don't know if they take it the right way, is I don't like to work with people who aren't motivated. So a step outside my comfort zone would be to work with people who are either unmotivated or challenging. I'm not saying I'll go there, but that absolutely would be outside my comfort zone.
I like it. All right, so for me, I have no problem living conversations off the cuff on the edge of what that conversation is. And as you know, I prep my guests and I say, show up, you don't need to do anything. I'll help guide the conversation and it'll be fun. But one of the things that's challenging is when there's a video component to it. And because it's not only like, I'm not too worried about whether my face is scrunched right now, right? Like now it's scrunched, you can probably tell. But when you're on a video and it's a live video, those are these different elements to think about. So it sort of really steps up the game. So for me, live video is something that I'm comfortable with, but it's still a little bit outside my comfort zone. So I'm trying to do weekly Facebook Live videos to really challenge myself because you only get one shot. It's only, you know, there's that much more pressure on it. So putting my face, my ginger mug behind a camera that's live is something that I'm finding is pushing outside of my comfort zone, but it gets easier and easier and more enjoyable.
Great. So not only did you step outside your comfort zone, you're definitely seeing progress.
Yeah, totally. And I think that's true for a lot of things, right? These half steps, because it's hard to just jump on the field, right? It's easier to sort of scoot closer and closer to it until you're on the sideline. And then maybe accidentally you might get sort of pushed in and then all of a sudden you're on the field and then you're there.
Yeah, absolutely. Now with the March for Their Lives kids, I mean, one has to wonder, how can you possibly get up in front of hundreds of thousands of people? And I've been thinking about this. Not only are they articulate normally, but I think at times, and this is sort of a sidebar, but it's on everyone's mind, I think passion can really motivate you to overcome fear and discomfort.
And I agree, but wait. You're saying that these kids aren't just crisis actors? You mean that they weren't hired by to create an alternative story?
It's all a conspiracy.
Oh my God. Yeah, these are fake kids with fake passion who happen to all, you know, get trained as crisis actors to then go to a school that just so happened to, you know, have one of the most tragic incidents ever so that they could land their career in front of people and create marches because they're all paid actors.
Yeah, I don't know how some people think. It's really baffling to me. But
baffling is a good word. Like, it's hard to find a word that justifies the feeling that comes along with people questioning the passion of these young children who are driven by motivation, to make a actual change. So baffling. That is the word of the day, ladies and gentlemen. Baffling.
Yeah. I'm baffled.
Let's go
anyway,
back.
Did you want me to go into some of the some of the observations I have about women speakers?
Absolutely. Let's dedicate some time to that. I think this has been a fun sort of conversation about there are some differences. We've got a couple little tips. But at the same time, like, let's deliver some high-value tips and observations of maybe why there is this gap in the gender gap within the speaking world, and that really translates to this larger gap from equal wages to equal rights to equal everything. So let's talk about some of these observations.
Okay, so we said with males, and this will not change, they have deeper voices and they take up more space, except for the tiny little guys. Anyway, so what are the things I've observed about female speakers? One is, this is just a wonderful gift women have. We're simply more colorful, and we're more interesting to look at. I hope one day guys can, you know, comfortably wear what I'm wearing, an aqua jacket.
Right.
With all sorts of shiny trim. We're simply more interesting to look at. Now, if you're exceptionally beautiful, that could be held against you. That's a whole other body of research. Number two, not only are we more interesting visually, but we tend to be, with an exception of people, you know, in your field, Ryan, we tend to have more what's called vocal variety. So right now I don't have any vocal variety. So in general, women have more vocal variety than males do. Again, the stereotype and the extreme might be most athletes don't have a lot of vocal variety because it's considered more macho to not have changes in pitch. And third, an observation that I have about female speakers is that they're a bit more conversational, and they might be more comfortable in connecting with the audience in terms of a relevant personal anecdote. Though, the other day I worked with a female scientist, and she was very hesitant about even saying that she loved the Bruins. And I said, go for it. You know, the more your audience knows about you, even if they're a very stuffy board, in her case it was a board of directors of her company, the more likable you will be. Well, that's a whole other issue. Women are always struggling with likability and competence. Now, so are men, but the range, or help me with the words here, men are cut more slack in terms of, if he's not likable, you know, it's okay because he's competent. If he's competent and he's a jerk, you know, I'll accept it.
I'm visualizing some sort of a graph here, right, where you have, like, on the y-axis and the x-axis, and you've got this likability, in relationship to this competence. And you could almost have a man graph and a woman graph, and I bet you would see those differences, right? To where people who, I like the word slack, because it's they are giving more benefit of the doubt, and maybe they look past certain stuff when it comes to men. But with women, I think because there's this heightened awareness about trying to let people understand that just because someone is a woman doesn't mean that they're less competent than their male counterpart, it's almost like it brings this hypersensitivity to it, so that when you're watching a woman speak or you're interacting, you're almost, you know, maybe unconsciously looking to either confirm or deny that confirmation bias. Mm-hmm. Because I think this has to do with confirmation bias. And this is like, my 2018 is really obsessed with confirmation bias as a concept. Mm-hmm. Because the fact that what you perceive to be true, regardless of whether it's true or not, whether they're crisis actors or whether they're, you know, competent, you start to look at the data around you and you conveniently ignore the data that it works against it, and you seem to put importance on the data that supports it.
Mm.
And so let's say with a male speaker, you know, and he's in a suit and he looks sharp and the presentation is sort of there and all the pieces are there. In your mind, you might be thinking, just from a confirmation bias, oh, he's in a suit, he's professional, he knows what he's talking about. And then he just starts with a lame opening and fumbles through stuff and there's tech issues. But maybe he makes a funny joke just once. And so you're like, your confirmation bias is not looking at all the mistakes. You're looking for anything to prove that you are right. because we humans love to be right. Just like if I'm driving the car, I'm like, oh my gosh, I think I'm going to be late today. Ding, 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 ding. Everything that I see, oh my gosh, no, there's more traffic than normal. Ah, why didn't I get this? No, It's like you reinforce what you're thinking to make sure that you're right. And I think that's maybe a root of why women don't get as much slack on stage, is because people are sitting there, whether it's unconscious or not, trying to confirm what their core beliefs are. And that comes down to that cultural change that needs to happen.
Now, do you think that starts from even the beginning, like a first impression?
I think it starts from how you're raised, to be honest with you.
Okay.
So, like, you know, there, I know some of my buddies, their dads are like manly men. My dad's a manly man. Now, my dad supports women, and he's always been, you know, he's always really set me up great with my perceptions. But there are some men who take their sons aside and probably reinforce things about women that are absolutely not true, but that's culturally transpired. And you're not going to get that guy that's out there going, yeah, I think all women are lame. But they might subconsciously be looking for data and cues and signals to reinforce that, because it's so ingrained. That's what they grew up with. That's what their dad knows. That's what they were told. It's this sort of legacy. And I don't think that it's right. I'm just trying to imagine where that comes from. And again, if your dad is telling you something, you want to think he's right. So you start to see all the data in the world that reinforces what he said, because he's right and you're right.
So right. I think it would be great to think some more, since it's one of your goals for 2018.
Yeah.
I'd love to think some more with you about how this does affect communicators and speakers. Now, one example that stands out that no one likes to talk about her anymore, but it really stands out, is perceptions of Hillary Clinton.
Okay, yeah.
Because almost no one denied her competence.
Right.
People didn't like her.
Yeah.
The only time her popularity grew, and this is, to me, really fascinating in terms of gender, is during her first campaign, not this time around, the time before, she, I guess, felt exhausted at an appearance in New Hampshire, and she started getting teary. Her popularity grew the next day when she shed tears.
No.
Now, we know that's worked against men in some
right.
situations.
Because they're perceived as weak or emotional and unstable.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The real question in the research is, what could she have done differently to basically take advantage of what she knows is the reality? You know that there's these systemic biases. You know that people in the audience are going to be thinking certain things. So, like, that's something that you can't change. That's a big galleon of a ship that's, like, headed on a compass course. Whether, you know, the wind is blowing left or right, it's so big, it's just going to kind of keep going that same direction. But how do you... It makes me think of curling. Yeah, this steel ball that's sliding across has all this kinetic energy. You can't stop it, but maybe you can go on the sides and you can manipulate its course a little bit, right?
Yeah.
So,
yeah, and that's what a coach tries to do.
Right.
I mean, and we're all always balancing appeal to logic, because most of my clients have to provide information, and appeal to emotion or relationships.
So I think on one end you have these activists and these amazing people who are speaking out saying, we need to change. And yes, we need to change, but I don't know if the change can just happen immediately because it's so dynamic and complex and rooted. Is there also a good strategy in that we need to change, but hey, ladies, this is what's happening now. The curler ball is going down, so let's utilize what we can and do these certain things in order to get the best results you can while the change is happening. Because with these huge social things, it's not a light switch. You just can't all of a sudden flip it and switch. There's always the naysayers. There's always the other side. There's always this fake news. So what are your thoughts on, like, the concept of, yes, pushing forward with a change, but to some extent accepting some of the realities and then working with them? I don't know.
Let's put it this way. Maybe I have a narrow focus, but I am hired to help events and meetings go well, focused more on how do you help this to go well. And if these events around the world related to women leaders and speakers go well, then maybe we're going to see a change. And at the same time, as we said about the next generation, they come in with a different set. What's the opposite of biases? A different lens.
Yeah.
In terms of cutting women more slack. And who knows, maybe expecting more of men. But, you know, we have some formulas. that, that apply to both men and women. Begin with relational stuff, then get into the informational stuff, and then end with relational. I mean, that's very easy. And, you know, from the Greek, pathos, logos, pathos. That's from Aristotle. I didn't make that up. Pathos appeal to the emotion. Logos appeal to logic. Pathos appeal to the emotion.
So this, so what you're saying is that regardless of what the current state of the union is and the sort of systemic oppression towards women that is causing top SEO speakers to not be identified as women or having male counterparts get more speaking gigs than women, at the same time of pushing this larger movement, you have this ability of just honing in your craft and breaking those stereotypes. Because if you are an audience member and you're like, you know, women speaker. Like if you have that sort of, and then somebody comes out and absolutely crushes it, that's what it takes to change that perception. And now they're going to be like, wow, that was an amazing presentation. That was an amazing performance. And the next time they listen to somebody who speaks on stage, they might be more inclined to have less of that bias. And maybe it just slowly chips away. But you're saying there are tactics and strategies and perfecting your craft of speaking. That is your superpower. Like, there's always going to be villains, but you have that superpower and that can come up on stage. So I think that's an interesting approach. There's no like, oh, because I think some people in the movement, they're like, well, it's so hard to change. It's not going to change. What good is it to do? Maybe that's, you know, even a man's perspective, right? But I think there's one thing for the major cause, then there's other for the change makers who are changing that perception. It's one way. It's one thing to say women speakers are just as good as men speakers. It's another thing to watch 10 female speakers and be like, yes, absolutely. But that comes with changes in elementary school, with, you know, women being supported at an early age to get the time and the traction and the support that they need, because you can't just become a speaker without support. You have to have people believe in you. You have to have the confidence. You have to really, you know, have a supportive community. And maybe because there's not that core supportive community, or at least it's not as widespread, that's some of the challenges.
Right. And that's why, as a coach, I love when my clients seek out techniques from me and also do a lot of peer coaching so that they can get candid feedback about how they can be better next time than they were the last time. None, you know, none of us are that hot from the beginning, usually.
Right.
Unless you're, you know, you're incredibly gifted.
And even those people that are incredibly gifted, you probably don't realize it, but they spent their 10,000 hours and their years and their struggles and their stories. It's only because of that hard work that you actually see them in the limelight.
That's right. Or they might have had role models growing up.
Right.
That, you know, it seeps in. You know, it seeps in. A lot of my colleagues grew up in a family where their parents were speech coaches, and they thought everyone knew the concepts they knew.
Right. That is an advantage. That is definitely an advantage.
Yeah. Anyway, I better get out of this nursing room. The reason is someone who actually has a baby may be coming in.
Okay. Well, you are on the move, and that is totally cool. I'm going to let you go a little early. And one of the things I enjoy about being connected with you is you're a great content curator when it comes to articles that I wouldn't necessarily find. And you've, you know, consistently sent over amazing articles about women and speaking. And so I'll let you go on the move. And then I'm going to do a dramatic reading of one of the
one dramatic. Of the... I love it. I'll be able to hear it, though, right?
When
you send me the...
Yeah. So, you know, this is actually live streaming at KUCI.org. And up in the top corner, the top right-hand corner, you can click listen live stream. And we'll go from there.
Okay, sounds wonderful.
Well, Lori, before you go, and we might have to bring you back and sort of continue the conversation, but if someone was inspired by what you said and they need some master coaching or they wanted to learn more about you, how do they find you? Where's a good place to point them?
Okay, thanks a lot for asking. And it's important to know I'm based on the East Coast, mostly in Boston and in Florida when it's snowing here. And people can get in touch with me. I'm going to give my cell number. They can text, and I'll also give my email if that's okay.
Sure.
My website, you know, just in transition right now. Okay. Cell phone, 617-571-0944. Pausing. 617-571-0944. Speech coaches love talking. Don't be afraid. And this one's a little hard if you want to write it down. Laurie, L-A-U-R-I-E, at Partners in Communication, Inc. Partners in Communication, Inc., I-N-C.
There you go. And then you're on Twitter as well, and everybody who's following me on Twitter, I've been doing some tweets and gave you some credits for it, and we'll get this into a podcast, we'll share it out, and we'll spread it, and you know, I'm excited to continue the conversation. We haven't really talked about it, but you've approached the world of speakers as a podcast sponsored by SpeakerHub, and this idea of trying to create a little bit more awareness of how we can support women who are trying to find their voice and find that superpower, whether it's part of the podcast or a spinoff or a workshop or a summit. You know, stay tuned for that, everybody, because, again, I think that this idea of women helping women to become more professional speakers, the only thing better than that is men behind the women who are supporting the women.
Yes, and I like the title, Super Women Speakers. And before I get off, I want to say you are fantastic with analogy. Really? They just come off the top of your head? I'm very impressed.
Yeah, it's that and making up words, right? I mean, both of those are part of my pastime. I enjoy that profusely. It's like lighter fluid to a Duraflame log that is already lit.
Oh, my God. That is too funny. All right. Well, okay. I hear a baby crying. So.
Okay. All right. So go get on the move. All right. Well, thanks for the talk today, Lori. And it was fun and looking forward to continuing to support how we can.
All righty.
All right.
Take care. Have a great day.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Okay. Well, Lori had to jump. She's a woman on the move. And just kind of for fun, I'm going to do a little dramatic reading. I don't know how drama I'm going to get here, but she sends all kinds of fun articles. And this one caught my eye. It's actually an interview, which makes good for the dramaticness. And the title is When Women Speak Up, A Conversation About Women. And let's see, Speakers with Tabby Brittle. I'm not doing so well. Start off the gate here. Okay. So let's see how this goes. Last week, I had the pleasure of sitting down to talk with Tabby Brittle. Tabby is a celebrated women's leadership coach, journalist, best-selling author, TEDx speaker, and leadership ambassador at Take the Lead. She supported thousands of women on their path to leadership. As a professional woman who does quite a bit of public speaking myself, now I didn't write this article, but you understand, I've always been curious why there aren't more women speakers out there, at conferences and on panels. Tabby seems to be the person who is perfect to ask why. And this is Tabby's passion, her expertise, so I'll let her insightful answers speak for themselves. Now, Olga is the interviewer, and Tabby is the one being interviewed. Now, I'm not going to throw my voice into two different ladies to do this. That would be very dramatic, but let's just see how it goes. So the question is, Olga says, what are the current stats on female speakers? Tabby, I can only speak to TED and TEDx events. TED executive producer June Cohen gave a talk in 2013 titled Where Are All the Women Speakers? In which she stated that only about 20% of the shortlisted TEDx talks that came to her for consideration on TED.com were by women. And only 15% of the recommendations that came from the main stage TED were women. People think that women are out speaking a great deal, but when you look at the numbers, it's only about 20% or fewer. There's actually an assumption that when women speak, they're speaking all the time. Even in the second presidential debate, people said that Hillary had most of the talk time when, in fact, she didn't. When I personally spoke at TEDx last year, there were only 3 women out of 11 total speakers. Women are always the minority when you look at panels as well. And Olga says, well, why is that? Producer June Cohen says that women speakers are harder to find. I find that difficult to believe. We're out there in the world, we're half of the workplace, so excuse me for being a little flimsy one here, but it's the one that is used a lot. I think there are other factors at play. One is an unconscious bias. Hey, we talked about that today. The unconscious bias, and another is an organization simply to forget to invite women to come speak. So organizations, don't forget the ladies. Let's see, Olga says, how do we address this going forward? And Tabby says, women are starting to recommend each other as speakers. That's an area for growth. So women should be recommending each other and applying for themselves more often. Now, Olga, what about the age-old fear of rejection? Women don't just need to apply to speak. They need to persevere as well. If you don't hear back from an organization or you don't get a no, don't take that personally at all. keep on going to the next event organizer or the next conference. There have been studies that show that men apply for a job and don't get it. They blame it on the process, whereas women blame it on themselves. Now, that's interesting. All right, what else holds women back? Olga asks. Women don't value their voices enough, and they've been taught that by society, women for the ages have been persecuted for speaking their truth, and it is held in their psyches. Let's see. We often consider our ideas second rate to men's ideas. Fortunately, this is changing with great feminist thoughts and conversation, but it goes so deep into our consciousness. Men are the assumed leaders and the ones assumed to have the superior idea. I know that this sounds archaic, and it should be, but it's still very present. There is an undervaluing, not just by men, but by women themselves. All right, last question here, and then we're going to transition. Olga says, I think we're missing a key point. When it comes to standing out and speaking up, many women are afraid of being judged by their appearance. Tabby says, I haven't focused much on that, but it's obviously very important. Women feel that they're putting themselves in a position where they feel they'll be judged by the way that they look instead of what they say. They think, how will I be judged by what I choose to wear today? So in order to protect themselves from humiliation, maybe they avoid it altogether. Wow. The reality is that there is bias. There is this perception out there. But the real reality is that it doesn't have to be that way. So if you're a woman who wants to take the stage, you need to do it. And there's people out there like Lori, there's people like myself, people who want to support you in that effort, because speaking truly can be your superpower. Well, I enjoyed this conversation today. Keep the conversation going. Really, it's about everybody joining forces to make sure that it is a better world for everyone, and we cannot forget the ladies. Ladies, get on the move. I'm going to put you with some experimental music here. Granted, I have no idea what it's going to sound like, but that's what's exciting. We'll see you next week, everybody. This is Ryan. Peace and out.